Communications.
Attention, students. Are you feeling overwhelmed? Do you need a more flexible schedule? Athabasca University has you covered. AU offers over 850 online courses designed to fit your needs. That's 850 opportunities to earn credits that seamlessly transfer back into your program. Improve your GPA, explore new subjects, and study from anywhere. Visit athabascau.ca to browse our online courses and transform your academic journey.
And good afternoon. It's about a half a minute after 4 o'clock, and thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and this is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, in the first hour from going back again to the 2024 Poets at Art Fest, 10th annual three-day outdoor festival held this past summer. And we're going to move into some more readings from that. In the first hour from the second day's late afternoon session, you'll hear back-to-back readings by Sarah Rogers, Elizabeth Green, and Kate Rogers. You'll also hear a reading by someone who couldn't make it but would have been in that group that day, her name is Sarah Wells. This poetry festival is part of the Art Fest Kingston Artist Festival held each year during that July 1st week-long weekend. In the second hour, as we finish up that late afternoon session and then move into the third morning group, you'll hear readings by Ellen Breezemaster, Gwyneth Whitford, and Beth Marie Michalska. Just my usual start of the hour announcement, and it is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but all is played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. So here again, from the late afternoon session in the second day of Poets at Art Fest 2024, you'll hear readings in this order by Sarah Rogers, Elizabeth Green, Kate Rogers, and then immediately after that, you'll hear a reading by Sarah Wells. Here you go. I hope you enjoy it.
Up this afternoon, we've had some changes in this group. This group, this session has been beset a bit with things going on where some people couldn't make it, so we've had somebody also filling in their stead. One of those is Sarah Rogers, who I just met, well, I just met 2 days ago, but anyway, yes, she is, they're actually in that tent right up there. You're probably going to tell them that. I hope I didn't steal your thunder. Anyway, so that's why I don't have the bio there. I've got it right here, and she does have some books over there as well, or a book over there as well. And from that book, Sarah is a word witch that explores the edge of consciousness to deconstruct the story behind the veil of cultural expectations and illuminate the intrinsic connection and communication that transcends and transforms from being close with the elements and the mystery of life. This is Sarah's first collection of poetry. She was recently published in Pivot and Pause, an anthology, 2020, by poet Jour Antoinette and international best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert. Sarah's poetry was published in Unsettling Inner Landscapes, Critical Spirituality and Poverty of Whiteness, 2020, by writer Alea Aaron Lennon. Sarah is a teacher and facilitates writing circles for women. She lives in Ontario with her longtime partner and their two daughters. She can be found dancing with the wildflowers under the moon or around the fire, listening and writing to the sound of magic. Let's bring up Sarah Rogers.
Thanks, Bruce. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay, thank you. That was lovely and also embarrassing. So I have one self-published book, Elemental Magic, which I've created a line of apparel with poems on it, which brought me here because this is the only art festival I know of that celebrates poetry the way you all do. So thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here and to read. So I have a couple poems that I marked off that I'll read, and from Elemental Magic, and then a couple from the next one, whenever that will be. So this is Elemental Magic, and this is Long Night. Long Night. May the long night land softly upon your weary heart. Wrap your arms around midnight, like a lover that visits once a year. Her, the moon, must have her time. Slow dancing, slowly, through the familiar darkness that lingers long enough for a poem to be born, a song to be sung, a dream to be seeded, awaiting the light's return. Keep warm the magic you find in dark places. So all of the chapters all connect with an element. And so that one was in the element of magic, the fifth element. And this one's in the element of air. It's called Robins. I watched a mama today leave her nest and come back. Leave and come back. Building her nest, building a future, building security and safety, building adventure and uncertainty, building the perch for her baby's first flight. She took pieces from my garden and the neighboring yards. She took pieces from the places she went and built a home. Thank you. And this one is in the element of fire, and it's called Primal Love. Primal Love. The unfolding of life's pages brings us back to the circle, where everyone is included. Childhood wandering becomes as rhythmic as breathing. The wild becomes our closest friend. For on the path to returning, we remember the beginning. Born of primal love, to return to love, to our original instructions that surface from the land into our body. Questing for the circle is the gift that braids our spirits together. These are a couple new poems, newer in the last few years anyways. How to use a poem. Pay attention to how poetry enters the body with an appetite for wild things. Today will become tomorrow, and yesterday was today. Your life will occur the way that water travels through your hands, subtle and steady. Don't be too humble for the soul to be joyous. Given our bones and blooms of language to fill the sound of all living things. Even mountains exchange echoes, trees sigh content with their daily task, and rivers inhabit gravitational alchemy, open mouth, tongue arrowed to shape bodies collecting word marrow almost extinct. How to use a poem. Nature's original architecture engineered on sacred land. How to hold a child, a lover, and the dying well. Lore this landscape of impossible translation. The air's rebellion in your lungs is elated. You begin in womb, river to your mother's body, solidarity with water and land. How could you ever doubt that you are the river's poem walking the earth? How else could you be breathing, and with what else in your body but impossible translations? Bit of a contradiction, but this next poem is Translations of Bone. Translations of Bone. The unrelenting scream became the aperture to what strength slept dormant in my bones. A seam spliced in sunset, commanding mastery of the situation. The thought of the river was betrayal, but crafting words seemed carelessly violent to the spirit. Masking mystery to satisfy how the body answers to sacrifice and soul. The tongue convicted, like the electricity of emotion, compelling lightning to a tree and flames to wind. A face of elements, shaded in muscles, labored beyond the quiver of mind. Immersion fell between sunrises, where everything emptied as a gift for the making. Insistent in flame, capable to burn the heart free and illuminate what is hiding. My body did not coil. We arrowed, lengthening in course. I grew four legs in the woods that evening, darting sight, and walked on the howl of bone. Thank you so much. This is my last poem today. Thank you again for having me. Thank you, Bruce, for all that you do for the poetry community and for poetry. I can't tell you the world is fine. I can't tell you the world is fine, but there are hummingbirds buzzing towards the sweet sugar water every morning at my window. Birds share seeds to grow forests and fields of wildflowers we inhale and take for granted. And it fills the word generous. A family of gophers kiss and eat grass together. Children, there are children playing. And countless stories written only with the grace of eye contact. And soft skin folds on weathered blue veined hands holding the day with forgiveness. There's something called a smile, and it points up. And its faith is an instrument to the soul. Lungs can summon the music of laughter from the root of your body and reach the clouds. And it's how our feet know how to leave the ground and return home. I can't tell you the world is fine, but life is born today and hope tomorrow. And this fills the word gift. There is prayer, goosebumps, colors of light that fill the word awe in your mouth, open and without end. There is a word for dancing and its freedom. Creativity breathes too and its salvation. I can't tell you the world is fine, but there's a word for incomplete and not yet finished. And stay with me here a while I tell you I see you. And you help me see myself. And that's love. I can't tell you the world is fine, but I can tell you there's still poetry.
Let's give Sarah another hand. Coming up next, Elizabeth Green has published three collections of poetry, a short story chapbook, and a novel. She has edited and co-edited six books, including We Who Can Fly, Poems, Essays, and Memories in Honor of Adele Wiseman, winner of the 1998 Canadian Jewish Book Award for Best Scholarship on a Canadian Subject. She is past Ontario representative to the League of Canadian Poets. She taught English for many years at Queen's and was a founder of Women's Studies, now Gender Studies. Let's bring up Elizabeth Green.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bruce, and thank you so much for organizing this massive festival. It's incredible, and I'm very pleased to be reading here. Also, thank you all for coming. I mean, this is the last session of, you know, of a long day. So again, thank you. And I'm also really pleased to be reading with Alan Breezemaster and Kate Rogers, who I like so much, and I like their work, and you know, it's a privilege, and it's also very nice to read after, you know, someone mystical who ended her set in such a lovely way. Okay, so I'm going to read three three poems and a cover poem. And sort of let me know if you can't hear me. Luckily, we don't have, at the moment, we don't have sirens and music. That makes it easier. Okay. At the Grammys, Joni Mitchell, mythic in black and gold, silver-headed cane tapping rhythm, pours years of wisdom into both sides now. Song snatched from heady 60s wind, deeper now, etched into the air. She has looked at life from both sides now, and so have we, who shared the planet with her all these years. We are inspired by the courage in her voice. Saskatchewan tough, the song deepens before it goes its way without us. Okay. Thank you very much, but you don't need to clap. And if you feel you can at the end, that would be lovely. Okay. The next two are food poems. This one is Nettle Soup. I wrote it after Mother's Day, and it was inspired not only by the nettle soup, but also by my son, Alan, and the inexact recipe for nettle soup in this poem is taken from Anna Thomas's Love Soup. She's one of my favorite food writers. Okay, so nettle soup. Mother's Day, and I'm making nettle soup, not like the princess who made nettle shirts to restore her swan-spelled brothers to human form, but one more step along the motherhood road. Growth is long, whether for mother or son. Put nettles, diced fennel, leeks, broth, water in an ample soup pot. Boil, then simmer for 20 minutes. My mother never made soup. She liked presents, elegance for Mother's Day. We'd go out to dinner as if we were pictures in a 50s magazine. I was less a person than an image. I still have trouble saying what I mean. My son is outside planting beans and herbs. His red and yellow flowers grace the table. Caramelize onions for 30 minutes. Add them to the soup pot. Blend. When cool, add lemon juice and salt to taste. My son comes in, herbs planted, washes, comes to dinner, takes the bowl I hand him. We taste earth, sun, spring. It's good, he says. Hard to remember how closed in he was, how frightened of new foods. Over the years, we've both transformed. I into a mother who makes nettle soup. He into the person he was meant to be. Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's generous. That's generous. I'm not sure if this is a prose poem or flash fiction, but it was inspired by a cookbook written by an army friend of my father's who was also a family friend and also a writing friend of mine, Max White. And I was going to bring in the cookbook, but it was published in 1946, and it's so fragile that I think it would just blow away. Okay, How I Feed My Friends, a cookbook by Max White. This tattered cookbook, spine hanging by a thread, pages brown and crumbling, but writing still intact, opens doors into the past, several pasts. Here's Max White, young, agile, in 1946, springing around New York, meeting Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas for lunch, taking an out-of-towner to see paintings at the Met, dashing home to throw together eggs with asparagus for a supper guest. Another evening, he's making Blanquette de Veau for Alice Neal, still a struggling artist, her paintings unsold. Here are my parents, looking for a larger apartment or a house. I loved the house they found, a cottage nestled behind a high front hedge with bright bedrooms and a dark living room, a screened-in porch in back. There was a pear tree, blueberries, a large backyard with bushes to hide in. Here are the recipes of a vanished world, rich with butter, cream, cheese, sour cream, lobster Newburgh, jambalaya with ham and shrimp, roast duck, veal, lamb's kidneys, oysters, crab, abundance for mere Sunday night suppers, all much too rich for someone on the far side of middle age. But great to read, especially with the sociable stories around each recipe, a whirl of friends. Even then, Max's voice was incantatory, a writer's voice. He had published two novels before he was 30. Here's the crab who pushed its way out of a pot of water on the stove and scuttled away, leaving a disappointed cook who expected dinner. Here's Max's army friend, and my father's too, Arthur Bulowa, a lawyer but not yet a collector, who could answer any question according to Max. And here's a story not in the cookbook. Arthur, in New York, had a bad feeling about Max in Rome, and when Max didn't answer his phone, Arthur called the concierge and insisted he break down the door. Insisted. When the concierge did, he found Max unconscious and rushed him to the hospital. Arthur had saved Max's life by telephone and telepathy. Here's an opening into another past. My mother's handwriting on the blank end pages. Recipes for lemon meringue pie. I don't think she ever made it. And lemon cheesecake, which she did. I remember the graham cracker crust. When I knew Max, he was in his 60s, with gnarled arthritic hands and eyes magnified by cataract glasses. He lived in a basement apartment on East 13th Street with peeling paint, like Naples, Max said. Arthur lent him a painting by Alice Neal for his wall, and he had photographs of vibrant Parisian puppets over his desk. Everything spare, neat. A view of a courtyard on the other side of heavy security gates over his windows. He still had that incantatory voice, was still writing. I read his novels in manuscript, and when I visited, he'd pour Stolichnaya vodka, and we'd talk writing. Max's publisher had folded, so these novels were never published, but Arthur Bulowa arranged to have them accepted by the Yale Archives, where they too will open doors into the past. Alice Neal's paintings have become iconic and are in many museums. Arthur's collections of her paintings, of Fairfield Porter's paintings, of Peruvian hats, and pre-Columbian stone temples are all in museums. I learned from Max that writers keep writing, even with bad arthritis and cataracted eyes, and that your friends can be your family if you have good enough friends. Okay. So, thank you. So, okay. So the cover poem I'm going to read is by my dear friend Cynthia French, who died just about a year ago at the end of July, very suddenly, pancreatic cancer. I met her sort of in a scrum in the Santiago airport, and we were both on our way to an intense and terrifying and transformative poetry workshop given by Barry Dempster, and that was in 2009, and we remained friends ever since. So Cynthia wrote every week with Janet Barkhouse and Jan Fancy Hull, and they decided when she was still well to do a chapbook, but after she became sick, Jan and Jan decided to do it anyway, with the support of her husband and her daughter. And her daughter, who is a paper artist, did the paper and these great end pages, these great... So there's one at each end, but they're the same. So, okay. And Cynthia lived on a lake near Mahone Bay, and she swam often. So this is Last Swim. The lake water is cold, colder, so cold, skin shocked, I don't linger. Only after I realize that was the final jolting swim of summer. When I hear the loon's laughter fade to fado, I wish I had ventured further to the other side, laid my hand on frail rib of rowboat and of summer. Oh, thank you. Eh?
Let's give Elizabeth another hand. Up next, Kate Rogers' latest poetry collection is The Meaning of Leaving, AOS 2024. Copies over there as well. Her chapbook, written with Donna Langevin, Homeless City, debuted in January of 2024. Copies of that are over there as well. She won first prize in Subterranean Magazine's 2023 Lush Triumphant Contest for her suite of poems entitled My Mother's House. Kate's poetry has also appeared in Where Else, an international Hong Kong poetry anthology. She is co-director and frequent MC for Art Bar, Toronto's oldest poetry series. Let's bring up Kate Rogers.
It's nice to see so many friendly faces in the audience. I'm going to read for probably somewhere between 14 and 16 minutes. It timed out differently each time I practiced. Anyway, these poems are all from my book, The Meaning of Leaving. And they're poems, obviously, of leaving and returning. They're set in Asia, Southern Africa, and Toronto. And they're traveling poems. I will situate you when we move somewhere else. Yes. So the first one, Unreal City, is set in Toronto, and I was away from Toronto for 25 years teaching in Hong Kong. Unreal City. One. Fog blurs the Bloor Viaduct, Toronto. The faces, souls crossing. A nose ring. A bare knee, torn jeans. Here, Ondaatje's nun was carried off by wimple wings over the railing. It's been 25 years since I rushed along this truss arch bridge, unable to slow down for even a moment to admire the green canopy of the Don Valley 40 meters below. Now, plexiglass barriers block the drop, but I still fear the jostling gusts and the quivering leap in me. Two. Black Swan Tavern, Broadview, and Danforth. I used to come here for the Art Bar. Graying hipsters' word spells transforming my old neighborhood. I slide onto a vinyl stool. Order a dark ale. A stranger raises his glass, stares at my breasts, says he knows me from somewhere. Yes. Three. Outside Book City, a woman is propped against a sapling maple, cross-legged on a no-frills box. Her eyes leak. A grimace carves her cheekbones. She holds a dream catcher. A few quarters scattered in her money hat. Four. Young and Finch. A few years ago, right here, a white ton of incel rage. Vehicle crashed onto sidewalk, cracked the bone twigs of four teenage girls, barely dating age, pulped muscle, crushed skulls, and two grandmothers and two men with wives. Waiting for the light to change, a friend and I watch every passing van. Her class ran late that day, her students safe. She shows me the small lucky stone she worries in her pocket. Shows me her nails bit to nubs, edges crusted with blood. As we stand there, the light turns green, then red again. And you can hold your applause too. It's fine. Okay, so this poem, I'm just going to let you know, trigger warning for intimate partner violence. Okay? Yeah. I think many of you, judging by the age range in our audience, know who Sean Connery was. Right. Bond. James Bond. Yeah. Well, this is a different take on him. The passing of Sean Connery. And it has this epigraph. I don't think there is anything particularly wrong in hitting a woman, though I don't recommend you do it the same way you hit a man. And that was in the Irish Times. One. It took me 5 years to leave you, Derek Wilby. I gave you my college teacher salary, made you a sandwich every day. We were saving money to travel. Derek, you forbade me to have meals with co-workers or drinks with friends. You wanted me to know just you. I wore long sleeves to work, even in summer. The bruises blew as my shadow. You wanted me too weak to leave. When you punched me in the eye, the pain cleared my vision. Two. Your brother wrote me about your death. Did your mother beat him too? Thrash the backs of his bare legs with electrical cord? On our second date, you told me how she died of diabetes and a stroke, age 43. And how 6 months later, you found your father swinging from a rope in the barn, a barrel of sugarcane juice he'd kicked over, leaking on the hay. Roy Neck. The Afrikaner kids called you redneck. Your father, the bankrupt Englishman, face livid as a boiled beet. Was it your story I fell for? Three. Our wedding at the registry office, Chin Mun, Hong Kong. My engagement ring, diamond, already loose. Good enough for you, you said as I signed the book. That should have been a red flag. I heard you, but didn't listen. Craved a love story, hoped for refuge. Our matrimonial dinner by the sea, your cautionary tale about Jackie, your almost wife. She liked it, you said. What? I said. Being hit, you said. Who? I said. My ex Jackie, you said. Had it coming, you said. That was the first time you quoted Sean Connery, Bond, James Bond, hero of so many. I can't watch his films anymore. The Playboy interview, 1965. Women can't leave it alone. It's fine to hit us, to shut us up, he said. Four. Kruger Park, South Africa. Bull elephant, a dark gray thunderhead, rumbling. Flapping his huge ears. Must leaked down his temples. He backed the jeep down the dirt road for a mile while you smiled, Derek. Our honeymoon. Five. Connery, 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 I said. You dragged me by my hair across our Hong Kong flat. The herringbone parquet floor etched my cheek. Splinters lodged in my thighs. You had it coming for answering back, you said. Your grandfather whipped a black servant girl in the barnyard. She had it coming, you said. How? I said. She lured me into the stable. I was 12, you said. Did you find your father's Playboy under the cushion of his chintz armchair? Is that how you read the Connery interview? I picture the magazine flattened by your father's weight, that huge man. You were already almost as tall as him by then. You gang-raped a mixed-race girl behind your grandfather's barn. She stayed around even after that, you said. Once, you're back to me as you played computer solitaire, you said out of the blue, I'll destroy you. By then, we slept in separate beds. My bad dreams kept you awake. I had it coming. 6. My reply to your brother. The passing of Derek must be hard for you. I am sorry for your loss. 7. Light breaks into the room. My shadow follows me to the window. I dress quickly, as on the day I left you. I walk outside. I need to lift my face to the winter sun. Thank you. It's all right. Some people want to clap, and that's lovely. I'm going to read a much more fun poem now. Also set in Hong Kong. And while I was teaching out there for 20 years at City University, I met many wonderful women who were adventurous and ferocious, and that was a great antidote. And we went hiking together in Hong Kong and mainland China quite often. So this is called Menstruation Song, and it starts with an epigraph from Cantonese. In Cantonese, women tell each other, Ima Lai Do, my great aunt is visiting. You will understand more in a moment. My great aunt rarely visits these days, but she found me in Sichuan, halfway up the slope of Ermeishan, with 4 other women. Great aunt beckoned a monkey to leap out of his leaf nest in the camphor tree onto my backpack with a bag of apples. The monkey bared his fangs when we shouted and waved our arms. He lifted the pack flap and grabbed 2 apples. Later, a raven sauntered into the women's toilet in the monastery garden as I squatted over the stone hole. He plucked my used pad from the bin, ambled outside, scattered scarlet petals of its blown blossom in the breeze. Great aunt has retired since that climb, but sends notes in the beak of a dark bird. The stain of her sunset returns after an afternoon of love. And let's see where the next poem is. Oh, yes. The next poem is also set in, where is it? Yeah. I'm just looking for poem number 4. Yeah, this is also set in Hong Kong, and it's for my students, many of whom were involved in the demonstrations between 2014 and 2019. And it starts with an epigraph from Lo, a 21-year-old Hong Kong pro-democracy protester. I hope to exchange my life for the wishes of 2 million. We can never forget our beliefs, must keep persisting. Migration. The moths are most active at night. Their black-clad bodies swarm the streets like a miracle hatching, defying extinction. A black moth trembles on a window ledge, framed by a police spotlight. Never give up, she shouts, falls backwards, merging with dark sky. Well-wishers leave pots of night-blooming jasmine on the pavement where she fell. 1 month ago, another black moth, wings torn by the teeth of the wind, probed a vein, painted her last composition on the wall in blood. At 21, she must have felt old, her lungs singed by tear gas and pepper spray. Careful to slip past the webbing of the stairwell net, she jumped. A few students come for my 9 o'clock class, shuffling in their black hoodies, barely whispering, "Here," when I call their names. I let the absent ones hand in their essays late. They might graduate. The state forbids them to choose their leaders, so they seem to be leaderless. On the streets of Mongkok, they remind each other, be like water, as Bruce Lee said. Moths do not need the sun, their wings vibrating to heat their muscles. Many moths, their lives so short, do not eat. What do they live on? In my dream, the Prometheus silk moth eats fire. It burns from within, lands aflame to burn the old city down. And I have two more poems to share with you. This one is also in the chapbook that I have over there, Homeless City, shameless self-promotion. And it's called The Nose Ring Girl. It's actually set in Toronto in a district called Corktown, some of you might know, where my current husband and I moved just before the pandemic when we left Hong Kong. The Nose Ring Girl. In front of Tim Hortons most days with her supermarket shopping cart, two pyrite rings in each nostril. Her age? 17? 19. She stretches out her skinny hand, palm cupped, for coins. Her sleeve rides up, a bracelet of scars, binding her wrist. I buy her a bran muffin, which she drops at my feet, shouting, "They use lard." That is our second meeting. The cardboard cup of squash soup she knocked from my mitten yesterday, like vomit on the sidewalk. It will seem strange to her when I try again tomorrow, ask her name as I must. How much of her rage can my pockets hold after I empty them of coins? I watch as she uncrumples foil from a takeaway meal, folds it into a flat silver cone, pinches triangles from the edge, spreads open a shining snowflake, and tucks the corners into the steel bars of her cart. Was she evicted by her landlord for non-payment of rent? I picture her sweaters crocheted with holes, jeans torn at the knees, falling from green garbage bags as she dragged them into the savage cold. At 19, I had an attic room in an old row house. No insulation. Major Street, Toronto. I was thin. Layered sweaters, tights, under trousers in winter, making my rent by lifting spines from fillets of salmon and sole in Kensington Market. Party, common room, Rochdale College. A high school guy held out a silver foil boat with a long line of coke. Like icing sugar. I dipped my index finger, rubbed some on my gums. My heart leapt me over, couples entwined among boots in the hall. I forgot my coat, sprinted down Yonge to the ferry docks, watched the sun fry its yolk on the dark grill of the lake. And the final poem I'm going to read for you is for my sweetheart, who is sitting back there. Who I met after 7 years of being single in Hong Kong. It was a revelation. And his name is Dai. And a couple of things you need to know for this poem. Dai was in search and rescue with the RAF and the Hong Kong Government Flying Service. So that's relevant. And a Kelpie is a mythical horse, in case you don't know. Okay. And this poem is set in Edinburgh, so another traveling poem. Love Song, Edinburgh, for Di, half an earth away. From this cottage attic by the loch, I hear my voice lilt, flirting with you on the phone. Your breaths roll in, slow, a tide, salt water meets fresh. When you lived here, you surfed off Kintyre at night, balanced on the surging kelpie, without bit or bridle, unafraid of its curled brine lip. each mountain ledge muscled as your calf, cliffs broad as your shoulders, riding the winch line above Ben Nevis in a 40-knot gale. Your knees, your elbows, cobbled like the streets of Old Town. The bones of your ankles, the strongest stones in your foundation. Your spine ridge where you hit the ship deck, my path to the sea. Your body, the island I swim to, eyes rare blue granite in your worn rock face. Thank you for listening.
And let's give Kate another hand.
Good day, everyone. My name is Sarah Wells, and I'm extremely grateful to be here on air today. I was unable to go to the Kingston Art Festival, specifically the Poetry Tent, is where I've previously been involved. I was unable to go this year, but Bruce Kaufman has graciously allowed my recording to still air here with you guys, so I'm super happy about that, and thanks for having me. Also, a special thank you to Bruce Kaufman, who has really dedicated a lot of his time, efforts, and capabilities to create success in those around him, and I feel privileged to be involved in such. I'm going to start off, I think we should get right to the poetry, but, I consider myself a creative entrepreneur. I study holistic nutrition and I practice it, and I write poetry basically for the reason of grief. I was published in an anthology that came out of the, wonderful, magical success of last year, 2023, Art Fest at the Kingston Art Festival in the Poetry Tent. So I'm going to start off with reading my first three poems, only three, that were published in this anthology that is called More Than a Gathering. Editor Bruce Kaufman. Dropping names! Okay, I'm going to read my first poem, which is called Time and Time Again. Time and time again, it wrenches my heart, stiffens corners, blood's running cold. Whispers of insanity, reason with uncertainty. As thy wisdom shapes north, my sword slices into its core. Wicked words left behind, thy soul trembles into peace. Forever, my love be gone. Just going to take a sip of my coffee here. I don't know about you, but I put a ton of cinnamon in my coffee, along with cream and maple syrup. But I'm telling you, cinnamon's a game changer. So the next poem that went into this anthology of mine is called, well, it's not my anthology, it's my poem. But anyways, it's called Words from a Bartender. You see, I used to be a bartender for like 10 years. It was part of my past life. And I definitely still like making drinks, but I'm no longer behind that bar. It's called Words from a Bartender. Must be okay to be watched. Bartender's essence oozing through motions. She, he twists thy wrist and bolts in and around. Wrapping one's body to the rhythm must keep up. Conveys a mirrored resemblance of the devil best in action. Pouring spirits down throats as cash pukes in your face. Scared to admit one of the world's prophets occurs, the veil of Satan himself, the crisis of drinking, and the outcomes to blame. Thank you. And I'm going to end with the third poem here called Dawn Appears. Dawn appears, hold down your tears. Fairy tales speaking codes. Codes erupted mindsets. Mindset rattled by his own perception. A mere illusion, depth of reality found in the midst of this pollution. Thank you. And those are my three poems from More Than a Gathering. I highly recommend to reach out to Bruce and figure out how to get one of these books. It is very magical. I truly mean that. So I'm going to just wing it here now. It's my first take of this recording. I'm having a blast. I have this 5-minute journal beside me, and it offers a lot of random quotes when you turn to a random page. And I'm going to read a random quote. Start where you are. Use what you have. Do what you can. So I like that. Now we're going to move on to my next poem, which I actually wrote this poem really recent. This is work from this year, back in February. And that's recent for me because in the last year and a half, so much has happened that, you know, there's a huge pile up that's going to come out next year. You know what I mean? On paper. So I'm going to read this. I wrote this on February 1st, 2024. It was very painful to write. I have to let go. It's killing my soul. My eyes swell with realization. One day I won't go home. It's painful to lose childhood. Everything that belonged is mine. I guess now I realize the only things that belong are a notepad, a pen, a car, unforeseen future. Is it really true we are just a sack of bacteria absorbing experiences? And maybe my identity is more than where I was born. You know, it's darker than it needed to be, that poem, but really it's just a lot to do with moving out of a childhood home that was a very special place. So, you know, and packing up belongings, you know, it's like you're in and out of this so-called home, right? But such a lag of belongings and memories are there from the past. It's interesting once you cut those ties. But I can say it's quite freeing at the same time. I'm going to read one more poem, and that was from this year, January 16th, 2024. She smells expensive. Faint colors of white glisten through the window as I move my body on the elliptical. I remember every square inch of your body as if you are about to slide up my legs. I hope that didn't get anybody too rattled. So I'm going to actually end on a different poem, not that poem. One more, and just hang with me here. I do like this. We'll end on this. So I wrote this out when I was on a road trip in the pandemic. I just got in a car with a very good friend of mine. I'm actually wearing lucky socks from them today, and I'm using the Shure mic that they got me. But we were on this road trip, and I wrote this piece, actually, standing in front of it. What is it? Lake Huron? I think that's the first time I ever saw it. So here we go. Rolling in on a wave, it's called. I wrote this October 6, 2020. Rolling in on a wave, swelling power, rising to my tide. Cartwheeling like a windmill, slow, steady, feeling my journey as I move toward shore. Through rocks, propelling into the air, splitting into a mist, pieces retrieving. Dimes of my soul linger behind, diving back into the deep blue once again, with each wave making my way. I'll do it my way. Okay, I think there was a Frank Sinatra song about that. My way. I'm going to end on that note. Thanks for listening to me today. If you were, virtually blessed, and thank you. I'm going to end, I guess, now. I keep saying I'm going to end, and I will end here. Shout out to the Friendly Spike Theater Band and follow us on social media. The Friendly Spike Theater Band. Thanks so much, guys. Have a great day or a great evening, great week, great life.
And you just heard from the Poets at Art Fest 10, our 10th annual three-day outdoor festival that was held this past July 1st weekend. And in it, you heard live readings by Sarah Rogers, Elizabeth Green, and Kate Rogers, and then also a recording sent to me by Sarah Wells, who was scheduled to be there but could not be there. So it is about 55 minutes after 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock. I don't know why I do that all the time. Anyway, let's do this. I'll be right back.
Ciao.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
Late in the 1970s, four Kingston women got together to discuss the idea of creating a community house, a place where grassroots organizations, families, and groups could gather. A place where food could be prepared and shared, new skills could be learned, and lively discussion could be encouraged. For over 30 years, Kingston Community House has provided low-cost meeting space for hundreds of groups, allowing people to come together to learn from one another, share resources, and trade skills. As it becomes safe once again to gather in person, we look forward to providing the Kingston community with a comfortable and convenient place to reconnect with one another. Located in downtown Kingston, we operate 7 days a week. For more information on Kingston Community House and how to book, please visit kingstoncommunityhouse.org.
Heartfelt thanks to all of you today for tuning in to this first hour, as well to those who read Sarah Rogers, Elizabeth Green, Kate Rogers, and Sarah Wells for their wonderful readings, and then also to for the crowds who came by, not only in this session, but in all the sessions this year to support. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And one thing I always mention at least at the end or towards the end of each hour is just a reminder that every week, both hours of the show are uploaded to my blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They will remain there for 3 years. I usually get that uploaded shortly, well, close to 7 o'clock after I get home. And I will mention next week I plan to air some more readings from this event. I probably have two or three more weeks of readings from this event. I think this was the sixth airing of readings that I've aired, the fifth or sixth. Anyway, we've got a few more to go. We just finished up, or we're in the process of finishing up that last session of the second day. You'll hear Alan Breezemaster in the next hour that did finish that up, and then we'll move in to the first hour. And you know what? We're 15 seconds away from 5 o'clock, so I'm going to jump the gun and say welcome back now to the second hour. It is essentially 5 o'clock, and you are listening